Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we've been talking so much recently about unemployment, including with Paul Krugman just before. Let's talk about employment. Do you work in a classic New York job? My next guest is Nancy Groce, author of a new book called Locks, Stocks, and Backstage Broadway, The Iconic Trades of New York City. This book is a collection of oral histories woven together with a narrative by the author, oral histories of New York bus and subway drivers, bialy makers and lock smokers, Wall Street brokers, water tower builders, Broadway stagehands, and other jobs that are very New York. So we'll talk some about what's in the book, but we also want to add to Nancy's ongoing collection of New York voices. So let's have a little fun with this. If you think you work in a job that is very New York, call up and tell us what it is and tell us the best and worst thing about the job. 212-433-WNYC. That's our on-air number, not our pledge number. We'll never ask you for money on the air. 212-433-9692. We've just got a few minutes for this, so we'll put you right on if you call up. If you think you work in a job that is very New York, call up and tell us what it is and tell us the best and worst thing about the job, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And also, if there's any subway motorman or retired motorman or woman listening, call and tell us which is your favorite line to drive, and we'll explain why in a minute. But if there happen to be any subway motorman listening, what is your favorite subway line to actually drive? 212-433-WNYC, or again, anyone who's had any job that is very New York, call up and tell us what it is and tell us the best and worst thing about the job. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Nancy Groce is a folklife specialist with the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress and the author of Locks, Stocks, and Backstage Broadway, The Iconic Trades of New York City. Nancy, thanks for a wonderful project and for coming on WNYC. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for asking me.
What got you into this? Are you a New Yorker?
I am. I'm a fifth-generation New Yorker.
And we all talk about work with our friends and family all the time. What's the folklorist's approach to asking people about their jobs?
Well, everybody has a story to tell about their communities and their jobs, and there's lots of interesting jobs. But the folklorist looks for something called occupational folklore. So the stories and the customs and the rituals that surround being part of a trade or an occupation or a specific job.
Now, I'll kick it off here. I had a few very New York jobs.
Oh, yeah?
One when I was in high school was what we used to call a soda jerk. Do you know that phrase?
I do, indeed.
It just means that I worked behind the counter at a deli in Queens, or we called it a candy store at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I served customers their egg creams and cherry Cokes and ice cream sodas and whatever else. It wasn't even sandwiches in this place, just the soft drinks and ice cream. And the job was called Soda Jerk. And the best thing about it was that it was kind of the teenage equivalent of being a bartender, because you hung out with your customers sitting across the counter, some of which were, you know, my high school friends, and we'd gossip about the neighborhood. The worst thing was that I was really bad at it. The ice cream was always too hard to scoop, and I had to learn how to make an egg cream the right way, and I got embarrassed when people sent back my drinks for a do-over. So, again, listeners, if you think you work in a job that is very New York, call up and tell us what it is.
But fortunately, you went on to another job that you were much better at.
Well, hopefully so. All right. Harry in Manhattan did a very New York job. Hi, Harry.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What'd you do?
I have a PhD in English. I was a street bookseller for 30 years.
Oh, that's a great New York job. Well, not just New York.
In Soho.
But...
Yeah, where were you?
In Soho.
Uh-huh.
Right around the corner from... near where the new office is.
Where do the books come from, I always wonder, for the street booksellers?
I bought them in various places, from estates, from thrift stores. People would bring them in. I did okay.
What was the best thing about the job?
I think the best thing was annoying the neighborhood. The neighborhood became more and more ritzy. They couldn't take somebody locally who had a street attitude.
Did you have customers that came back on a regular basis?
I had customers all over the world who came back. I'd have European customers who came back every year. But I think even more New York than that job is now I'm a book scout. I just go around buying books. I sell them on the internet.
Wow.
It's a job that could be done years ago in London, but now probably can only be done in New York City. Because there are enough books in there are enough massive books in New York City that you can find them.
Sort of the online equivalent of a street bookseller. Let's go to another caller. Bernie in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Yeah,
hi, Bernie.
Hi, my name is Bernie Ilson, and I've been a press agent in Manhattan for over 40 years. My first client was Ed Sullivan. I just wrote a book about him called Sundays with Sullivan. And I've met some of the most interesting people in the world.
What was the best thing about being a New York press agent?
You meet people of all kinds, and you meet people who are famous or who you make famous.
How about the job. How about the worst thing?
What's the worst thing? The same clients. Some of them are really problems, but that's what makes it interesting. Not everybody's the same.
Nancy?
Brian, when people think about occupational folklore and traditions, they often think about very old jobs, but all jobs are changing continually, and it's part of that change that I found really fascinating, because being in New York, things don't stay the same, and as much as you'd like the older stuff to stay, this is anything that's healthy continues to change. So I think all these people who's called in so far are pointing to the fact that their jobs are constantly changing, but there's a base knowledge that they have of how to do them.
Nancy Grocci, author of Locks, Stocks, and Backstage Broadway, Iconic Trades of New York City. I think my favorite chapter of your book was where you interviewed bus and subway drivers. And you learn, for example, that there are subway lines that are more desirable than others for motormen to drive. Did that surprise you?
Given that some are outside lines and some are underground lines, I could see where it's a personal choice. But what surprised me is that there seemed to be no agreement. And that people on certain lines felt very much that they were in family lines, that say the J train in particular was signaled out as a train where the driver I interviewed at that point, Sandra Lane, felt that she was part of a smaller group within transit.
Right, and I'm going to read from that quote. I think this is her quote about the J train. The line being that it goes outside in the summer, most motormen want it, and in the winter they probably go to an indoor line like the E or the R, something indoors away from the elements. I stay with the J year-round. And talking about elevated lines in general, she said they are less hazardous to your health, actually, because of the steel dust and other factors like that. Lack of daylight, you have no concept of time when you're underground constantly, and it's somewhat depressing. You don't know what the weather is. Most people prefer to be outside. And then she talks about the lines with the best views for the driver, like the F, B, and D lines, because they go over the bridge from, you know, between Brooklyn and Manhattan. So I thought all that was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And my guess, and I'm going to pronounce her name right this time, it's Nancy Gross.
Yeah.
I've been corrected. It's G-R-O-C-E.
But indeed.
Mm-hmm. Pronounced Gross, author of Locks, Stocks, and Backstage Broadway. And we're taking calls from listeners with your iconic New York jobs. Philip in Rego Park, you're on WNYC. Hi, Philip.
Hi. I was from China, so when I arrived first time in Flushing, I think early 1990s, so I only job I can get is deliver food, like from Chinese restaurant and a car. That time, the Flushing is very different from now. So I got a kind of nice tip. That's a good one. The bad one is like during the winter or the night, raining days, so let's still have to do that.
That you'd get more money if you delivered on rainy days?
Yeah. That time, in 1990s, there are not many Chinese as right now. So they gave me a lot of tips. I remember one time, a nice couple, they have a birthday, so I deliver a lot of food, and they even wanted me to invite me to stay birthday. But I said I can't because my boss will fire me.
What a great story.
Really great story. Philip, thank you very much. Let's go on to Susan in Manhattan, who had an iconic New York job. Hi, Susan.
Hi. My job actually is very old. I restore and reproduce mosaics in the subway to either make a new station look old or I fix the ones that are broken.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
and,
I'll have to come interview you at some point.
I'm at work right now. I'm working on Morgan Avenue. We're replacing 72 columns that say Morgan Avenue on them.
That's great. It must be so satisfying.
I love it. And I'll say the best thing about the job is that when I'm doing it, I really feel that I'm improving the subway. I'm improving everyone's visual experience, even though it's not that noticed. And I think it's worthwhile. It's over 100 years old, many of the mosaics. Mm. So, you know, it's definitely something very New York.
When you do that, do you think about the craftspeople who originally put in the mosaics?
Oh, absolutely. I have a little collection of little pieces, and they have the like a lot of the original guys who worked in the subway, they put their initials on them in pencil, and I have a little collection of the initialed tiles that when we take out the old stuff, sometimes we find them.
Susan, thank you very much.
And thank you.
Give a shout out to the next motorman who drives by there at Morgan Avenue, okay? And, you know, you really get an appreciation, just staying with that chapter a little bit, for what some of these subway motormen, who people don't ever talk to as they get on and off the train, have to go through. So if people like driving the J, they don't seem to like driving the F. So one of the motormen who you quoted said, on the F line, a station's a station. On the F, I make like 38 stops on one trip. That's an hour and 40 minutes, and you're concentrating for an hour and 40 minutes. The stations almost sometimes blur together. The only really memorable station is West 4th Street, where there's two four-track trunk lines from the original IND. They converge at the southern end of West 4th, and there's trains on three or four levels at the same time, and you see trains going every which way. And that was another thing that came out in general was, especially on the night shift and these lines that go all underground, it's stop after stop after stop. One guy said you get into a zone, so you don't know where you are, but you know you're getting there.
Well, one of my favorite stories was the backstage Broadway hand who you'd think also got very routinized in what they did. And he talks about, tells this wonderful story about going out and sitting in the audience and being captured by the magic of Broadway. And he says, I didn't have any illusions, literally, but I was in the audience and I started to tear up and I thought, oh, they got me. So people's are really dedicated to these jobs.
Betty in Manhattan. You're on WNYC. Hi, Betty.
Hi.
What was your iconic New York job?
I love my New York job. I'm a home care nurse, and I make 8 visits a day. And I have been in every neighborhood and worked with every ethnicity and every income level that Manhattan has to offer. It's been a privilege.
Wow. Thank you. What's the best part is getting to meet all those different kinds of people?
Oh, absolutely. It's amazing. There's more similarities among us than differences. I'm sure of that.
Betty, thank you so much. Aaron in Brooklyn, your iconic New York job?
I was a parking PA for The Equalizer, that CBS show with the late Edward Woodward.
Uh-huh.
I would get on the train from the Rockaways travel 90 minutes to work a 12-hour shift for $75, but it was a license to hang out in Little Italy or Harlem or the Upper West Side where they hated us. And you could just, you had to guard the parking spaces a day in advance so that the trucks would have space when they came in to actually shoot the location scenes. But I was mostly there without the shoot, and you would just get to hang out and watch the street for 12 hours at a time in places where you would have often no business being otherwise.
Aaron, thank you very much. That's very New York. Joe on Staten Island seems to have had a whole lifetime full of iconic New York jobs. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Brian. Yeah, that's true. Starting with my family's restaurant we had in Times Square, and then from there I worked at the TKTS booth right when I turned 18 till about 5 years later, and that was probably the most memorable one, because that's when Times Square was in the 80s, and Times Square was pretty hairy then, and I saw a lot of things and met a lot of people. And then from there I went on to go to school, and also I was a Circle Line tour guide for a while, and still am, actually. And now I'm a freelance cameraman. In fact, when you won the Peabody, I was your cameraman.
Wow, and I didn't even know it.
I'm so proud.
Thanks for mentioning it. So give us one very short but hairy story about Times Square in the 80s.
Well, it's not necessarily scary, but I got to work. We used to get to work very early if that was your shift, and you get there at 7 a.m. And as I approached Duffy Square, the entire square was covered in fried chicken. Every single inch of it, from Broadway to 7th Avenue, there was fried chicken everywhere. And I went inside the booth where there were people already there, and there were two people there, and we were like marveling at the fried chicken. And then the next person who came in about an hour and a half later, we said, "Did you see all that chicken out there?" And they said, "What chicken?" And we opened the door, and it was gone.
Oh, that's truly bizarre.
That is.
It was very bizarre.
Very,
but,
very.
Know, that's anything can happen in Times Square.
That's
it usually
right.
Does.
That's a great story. We're really out of time, but we finally have a bus driver calling in. Ian in Brooklyn. Hi, Ian.
Hey, how you doing, Brian?
Good. What line do you drive?
I'm at an essay right now, but the line that I love to drive in the summertime is the Q56 on Jamaica Avenue.
Because?
It's so scenic. I mean, the neighborhood, there's something romantic about the neighborhood. When you go through it, it's like different cultures. You start off in the Hispanic part of East New York, Brooklyn. Then you go through old Woodhaven. Then you go through the Indians part over by Lefferts Boulevard in South Ozone. Then you go into Jamaica, the shopping area. It's really scenic. And, you know, you see different stores, a different variety of things that are on the line.
Keep it up, Ian. Thanks a lot for calling. And we will have to leave it there with Nancy Gross, author of Locks, Stocks, and Backstage Broadway, The Iconic Trades of New York City. Just tell us if you're doing a volume two or continuing to collect these oral histories online anywhere.
Well, I'm now at the Library of Congress, and we do hope to continue, and I'll let you know.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Great stories.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come.